Morning, everybody. My name is Annette, and I am an alcoholic, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. With me today is Matt, who is also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the People Helping People. I'd like to thank WHLL 1450 AM for allowing us the opportunity to share something about our alcoholism and the solution we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely based on the individuals who express them and not those of WHLL 1450 AM or of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. People Helping People is focused on how AA can provide help to people who have a problem with drinking. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking with the support of other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share how they did it, like the people here today. One alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the Fellowship of AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Massachusetts, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. The American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association recognize alcoholism as a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like some diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best short description of what AA is and how it works that I know of is what we call the preamble. I'll read it to you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Now I'd like to introduce my guest, Matt, who will briefly tell us what it was like, what happened, and what it is like now. After that, I'll provide some information about how and where to get help.
Thank you, Annette. As Annette said, my name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. I have been, well, first of all, let me say good morning to everyone out there who might be listening. And if you're wondering whether you're an alcoholic, if you have been in the rooms of alcohol of AA and have gone back out and are thinking about returning, I want to invite you to do so, as I think you may have learned already, and as I've learned in my journey, AA is a method for living, and it's a road to recovery that, as Annette has said, millions of people have taken successfully over the course of the last whatever years since Bill Wilson and a couple of others founded the organization. But just to give you a little bit of my story, I am now a little more than 6 years sober. My anniversary date is February 14th, 2014. I came into the rooms of AA, not because I identified myself as an alcoholic or that I wanted to give up drinking forever, but I came in because I felt like I might be an alcoholic, and if I wasn't an alcoholic, I might be having a nervous breakdown or possibly both. Life in the weeks and months leading up to coming into AA had become very unmanageable for me. And if anyone is familiar with the first step of AA, it's that you recognize that one of the aspects of the first step is the realization that your life has become unmanageable. And my life certainly had become unmanageable. So I came in, as I said, well, my sobriety date is February 4th, 2014, but I actually came into the rooms of AA a little bit more than a month before that. And I came in for the reasons I just mentioned. I didn't know anything about the 12 steps of AA. I didn't know anything about the fellowship of AA. I didn't really know anything about the history of AA, although I had seen signs. I'm a friend of Bill's on a lot of different cars, referring to Bill Wilson, the founder of the organization, or one of the founders. And but I went because it was recommended for me, and because my wife and my psychiatrist thought that I might be an alcoholic. So I came into AA, and for those of you who haven't been in AA before, AA conducts meetings on virtually a daily basis in counties throughout the country and around the world. And they have different types of meetings. They have speaker meetings, discussion meetings, step meetings, big book meetings. And I can't tell you what kind of meeting I went to first, although I can tell you that in the first couple of meetings I went to, I heard people who already considered themselves to be alcoholics describe their stories for me and the other people in the room. And as I listened to them, I started to identify with those people. And as I said, one of the reasons I came into AA was because I thought I might be having a nervous breakdown. And, you know, for a long time prior to coming in, I had messed up way of thinking. My head was full of self-chat. And I've heard a lot of people describe that, a lot of self-talk, mostly negative, a lot of self-talk and a lot of static. And I always felt internally like I was uncomfortable, that I was anxious, that I wanted to be doing something other than what I was doing. I was never content in my skin, and I wasn't content basically in any environment. And so I started listening to people's stories, and I started to realize, and I've heard this before too, I thought I was unique. I was very afraid to share my feelings with my family, with my friends. I had been in therapy for a number of years prior to the, coming into AA, and I withheld information from my therapist because I didn't want them to judge me. Even though I was there for help, presumably, I was afraid that if I told them what I was really thinking and what I had been thinking and what I had been doing for the past number of years, that they'd really think I was crazy, that there'd be no help for me, and I would feel more alone than I already felt. But when I came in AA, I realized that other people felt the same way I did, and other people struggled the same way I did. And the people in the room, you know, I had a perception, though I didn't know much about AA. I did have a perception of what I thought an alcoholic was, and it was someone who basically was homeless and in the street and unable to keep a job and unable to maintain relationships. And that hadn't been me, and so I didn't consider myself to be an alcoholic. Now, I'm telling you all of what was going on in my head when I first came into AA. So now I'm going to backtrack a little bit to my drinking history. And I grew up, I'm 60 years old now. And as I said, I came into AA a little over 6 years ago. But I grew up in a single-parent home not because it was, my father died when I was 5 years old, and left my mother to take care of, her four children. And, my mother did the best she could. And by the way, the story that I've been told, and I think is true, is that my father was killed by a drunk driver. So, I had, and when I heard that, I was 5 years old, and I had vowed to myself that I would never drink alcohol, and I certainly would never drink and drive. And so fast forward again, I had my first drink 7 or 8 years later, after vowing for the first time never have any alcohol. I had my first drink at the age of 12 or 13 in the woods behind a skating rink with a bunch of my friends, and I got drunk for the first time. And I loved the way it felt, even though I threw up that day and in a couple of subsequent times drinking for the in the immediate future after that. But I just loved the feeling that came over me. I was more animated. I felt freer to speak, felt freer to tell jokes. I felt that others were liking me more under the influence, and I felt that I fit in more. And I grew up with friends. I grew up with a bunch of people that I considered to be close friends, but I always felt that that I was on the periphery for some reason, and that they were closer to my other friends than they were to me. And if we didn't have those mutual friends, then a lot of those guys wouldn't be friendly with me. And that's how I felt, and alcohol took that feeling away from me early on. So I continued to drink in middle school. I was a weekend drinker. I was a weekend drinker in high school, except during the summers. In high school and college, I was probably a 4-day-a-week drinker, Thursday through Sunday. I always drank to get drunk. Until I came in AA, I didn't know what being a blackout drinker was. I have since learned that being a blackout drinker is when you can't remember parts of the night or morning when you're drinking. You don't remember how you get home a particular night. You don't remember seeing certain people that you saw during the night. So there, without a question, you know, I was a blackout drunk from virtually day one, and but I didn't recognize that I was a blackout drunker. For me, you know, all my friends were drinkers. There were a couple guys that were, you know, myself and a couple other guys probably drank more than the rest of our group, but we all drank. We all drank to get buzzed or drunk, and we did it through high school and college. And fortunately, I was able to get good through with good grades. I was a good athlete, I went on after college to grad school. And believe it or not, in grad school, and my drinking actually escalated, and I drank. I went to UMass undergrad, UMass Amherst, and UMass is a very big school. And because it was so big, I often felt I was alone at UMass. I didn't feel as comfortable at UMass as I did in grad school. And the grad school that I went to was a school of just a couple of thousand people. We all did everything together. We played intramural sports together. We played intramural football, basketball, baseball, softball, and we drank together. And, you know, where my drinking had been, I was still probably a 4-day-a-week drinker, but I was drinking way more than I had previously. And, but again, it didn't stop me from graduating. It didn't prevent me from getting a good job, and it didn't stopped me from getting married and having children. And, you know, so part of why I didn't identify myself as an alcoholic is because, by a lot of different people's measures, I was a success. And, I did, you know, I achieved a lot of the goals that people set for themselves when they're younger. But I did it in spite of myself, I think. And, I did it without having any grasp of what it was like to be a mature individual. I did it without, without behaving maturely. You know, people say some people are in AA for a real long time. Some people think that you're born an alcoholic. Yeah, I don't know whether that's true. It's a progressive disease, so whether you have that gene or whether you're an alcoholic when you're born, that alcoholism gets worse as you continue to drink and as you get older. But in my case, I was able to function. I was a functioning alcoholic who didn't realize he was an alcoholic. And then some things happened. I always drank, you know, I drank for, when I was stressed. I drank when I wanted to have a good time. I drank when I golfed. I drank when I played sports. I drank, I pre-partied. I post-partied, like a lot of us. But my life really was focused around drinking. And, I couldn't think of any social event that I wanted to go to if it didn't involve drinking. And if it wasn't planned on being a part of the social event, I made it a part of the social event. So, you know, my life from age 13 to 54 centered around drinking. And like many others, there were times in my life when I tried to stop drinking. You know, my wife has, for a long time, I've been married for quite a while now, and my wife for quite a long time has thought I had a drinking problem. And has several times asked me to stop drinking. And there was one period of time when I actually stopped for 2 years. And what prompted that was I had been out drinking at a firm function. I was supposed to be home at 11. My wife was 6.5 months pregnant. And I was supposed to be home by about 11. I stumbled in the door at about 2 o'clock. It was before we had cell phones and the ability to get in touch with everybody. And, you know, I didn't remember how I got home that night. But the reason I'm telling that story is that, later that weekend, my wife told me that she hadn't felt the baby kick for a while. And it turns out that she lost the baby, at 6.5 months, and she had to deliver the baby stillborn. And, I didn't share it then, and I didn't share it till a couple of years into sobriety, but I kind of blamed the loss of our baby on the fact, on the anxiety that I put my wife through while I was out that night. And I found out later that she also blamed me for that. And I think, you know, whether that's true or not, those are the feelings that were engendered because of my self-centeredness and my need to drink and my focus on myself, while I was out partying, while my wife was at home worrying about me. And, I mentioned that too also because alcoholics tend to have, some common traits. Among them are that we are very self-centered people. We're very selfish people. We have big egos, at least I do. I'll speak for myself. I have a big ego, but I am very insecure. And I figure that one out, you know, and it's true of a lot of people. We think that our way is the right way, yet we think we're less than a lot of people around us. And we're looking for approval from the people around us. And we get our sense of self-worth from the people around us rather than from within. So at that time in my life, I was very selfish, and I didn't realize I was selfish. I did give up drinking for a couple of years. But then after a couple of years, I said, oh, you know, it's been a couple of years. Maybe I'll start drinking again. And I did. And I don't know how long it took to progress again, but it progressed. And then I had a couple of tragedies. And for my story, my drinking seemed to escalate. I'm not sure if my wife or the people around me agree with this, but they escalate around tragic events. And a number of years later, after the episode that I just mentioned to you, I lost a niece who was doing, a 21-year-old niece who was doing a semester abroad in college in her senior year. And she came home from being out with some friends, and she died of sepsis. And not long after that, my brother, the father of that girl, ended up going to jail because of a probation violation for an OUI. And, you know, my brother was a four-time offender, OUI offender, and not one of us in the family knew about it. No one in the family, besides me at the time, considered him to be an alcoholic. And when that label was used to my brother, everybody in my family rejected that label and got mad at me for using that label. And I mention that because I couldn't identify with my brother at that time. I was judging my brother at that time. I thought he was way different than I was, that he had allowed his life to become a shambles, that he was allowing his marriage to go down the drain, that he was not being a good father. And those were all the things that years later started happening to me. And then one other event that was pretty traumatic for me and escalated my drinking, I think, was 9/11. And I got a call about my brother's daughter at work. And at 9/11, as a lot of us were, we were either at home or at work. And I saw the planes go into the Twin Towers. And, obviously it was startling. But not long after that, I got a call from my sister who said that my aunt and uncle and cousins had not heard from my cousin and their son and brother who was working in the towers. And it was a couple of days to a week later when his death was confirmed, as were the death of some other people I had known from years past, some better than others. And you know, at that time, I felt very, very fragile. I felt that I had been a good father, a good provider, a good husband. I had lived a good life. And what was it all for? You know, we're all just going to end up in a bad place anyway. And so my drinking really escalated. And you know, fast forward to the couple of years before I came into AA, I was drinking, and I used to make fun of people who drank from bottles or nips. I was going out at lunchtime getting tall boy beers. I was going to package stores where no one would see me getting nips of alcohol, usually vodka. I was going to remote locations. I was drinking. I ended up starting to drink during working hours, sometimes at work, sometimes after work, almost always after work, and always lying about it and hiding it from people and thinking it was normal, thinking that, you know, I had normalized that kind of drinking, that kind of hiding, that kind of those kind of lies until I couldn't take it anymore. And, you know, 2 days twice in the same week, although I had vowed never to let my kids see me drunk, they saw me drunk, and they saw me having to put myself to bed in the early evening hours, long before bedtime. And that started, so it wasn't a short path to AA. It took me a long time to get here. I do believe that I was an alcoholic from, if not from birth, then from a very early age. I do believe that my alcoholism progressed, and progressed differently at different times, but it certainly progressed to the point where I needed help, and I didn't know where else to get it until I came into AA. And, you know, I drank for a month while I was in AA. Matter of fact, I drank, usually I would drink after a meeting on my way home, and I would justify it. I said, you know, if I'm not drunk, then I'm okay, because an alcoholic is somebody who's drunk. And if I'm not under the influence, if I'm having less than a couple beers or a couple drinks, then I'm doing okay. But eventually, I knew I was kidding myself. Eventually, I came to the realization, thankfully, and it was really not through any conscious effort. The conscious effort was going to AA meetings. They tell you early in sobriety, go to 30, 60, 90 meetings, and 30, 60, 90 meetings in that many days. Just keep coming. Keep listening to other people. Open your ears. Ask questions. Take advice. Read the big book. Get a big book. Get a sponsor. And for those of you who don't know what the big book is, it's the AA Bible, essentially. It sets forth stories from the people who founded AA, sets forth the 12 steps of AA, and the traditions and story of people who have found recovery through the 12 steps of AA. And I kept coming, not, as I said, not because I thought I was an alcoholic, but I wanted to stop drinking for the time being. And I kept coming. I kept saying to myself, one of the phrases that you hear is, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And even though I didn't identify myself as an alcoholic, I had a desire to stop drinking at that time. And the more I read, the more I listened, the more I went to meetings, the better I felt. And then people took me out to what are called commitments. They took me to speak at the local jail, and they took me to speak to a local detox program. And the more I did those things, the better I felt. And you know, that self-talk started to drift away. And the periods of depression and isolation started to drift away. And, you know, AA did for me what years of psychotherapy and medicine were unable to do for me. I'm still on medicine. Don't get me wrong, and I don't want to encourage anyone not to seek help from professionals. There are a lot of us who need professional help, and for those of you listening who need it, please get it. But for me, I have found a peace of mind and a contentedness in the way I'm living by following these 12 steps of AA that I didn't have before. And I am working on a daily basis to try to become the man that I want to be, the man that maybe I thought I was before I identified myself as an alcoholic. You know, when I came in, I said, what has happened to you? How did you get to this point in your life? And now, you know, even though I hide my alcoholism from a lot of people still for professional reasons, I tell everyone that who knows about my membership in AA, that's really one of the best. It is the best thing besides my wife and family that has happened to me. AA has changed my life for the better. It has improved the quality of my life and the quality of my relationships. And for those of you who are looking for, who are desperate, who are looking for a better way of life, who are looking to put the alcohol or the drugs down, I encourage you to go to a meeting, keep going to meetings, get a big book, get a sponsor, and keep doing the next right thing. And with that, I'll end.
Okay. I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM again and Matt for being here. Before we go, I'd like to make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and to the professional community. They are the Public Information Committee and the Cooperation with the Professional Community Committee. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup at 413-532-2111. Write them at Western Mass Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street in Holyoke. Massachusetts 01401, or reach out to them online at westernmassaa.org. Western Mass Intergroup's number is in the telephone directory and is also in the 24-hour hotline number if you need help to talk to someone. I'll repeat the number, 413-532-2111. If you or somebody you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibility Committee at 413-532-3752. For more information regarding Al-Anon or Alateen, please call 413-782-3406. Both of these lines are open 24 hours. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you don't have to stop drinking alone.